Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
Alright, what's good, world? It's your boy, Pete Walsh, a.k.a. Lamborghini Petey. Back again. Episode 54, the I Hate the Mets episode. Nah, I'm just kidding. Got my boy Abe Schwadger with me. Abe, how are you, sir?
Yep, a.k.a. Abraham Lincoln bio. I think 54, Horace Grant. Is that a good 54?
That's a good Ho Grant. Tractor Trailer, rest in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Another good 54. Lee Nalon, another good 54.
Wow.
That's about the only three I got, but what's good, man? How are you?
I am enjoying this NBA playoffs. That being said, last night, I mean, I still enjoyed it, but it came at the expense of my own favorite team, the Wizards. That Isaiah Thomas performance was legendary, man.
Yeah, well, it's funny you bring that up because our guest today, Yaron Weitzman from Bleacher Report, was at TD. What is it? It's TD.
TD Garden.
TD Garden now. Was at TD Garden in Boston last night and was on hand. Yaron, how are you, sir?
I'm also from Slam, not just Bleacher Report.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Senior writer. Excuse me.
Yeah, don't forget that title.
Yeah, I apologize, man. I'm a little flustered at the moment.
One of the most prolific writers in Slam Magazine, so you know him well.
That's actually a big fact, man.
Yeah. So what was the scene like? I mean, you were there.
It was crazy.
Give us your vantage point. What's the crowd like? Did it evolve over the course of the game? Give us sort of the atmosphere. What was it like?
Vantage point, if you're not one of the main media outlets, you'd say you don't have the necessarily best vantage point at TD Garden. You're up there. But the scene was pretty crazy. I mean, the atmosphere was crazy. I'm used to going to Knick games this year, so this was a stark difference.
A breath of fresh air,
yeah. It was the Isaiah stuff is cool because you can kind of feel the crowd wanting to jump on that bandwagon and get into it. And in the fourth quarter and overtime, was just unbelievable to watch that and to see Celtics fans enjoy that.
Yeah, so when I was at TD Garden for Cavs Celtics in March, you were up in, like, where, like, the hockey people sit, right? So you were way up. And, like, the thing that – because I saw from there, from that point of view, is, like, it's honestly incredible the way Isaiah can, like, maneuver through.
Yeah, it's a very good angle for that.
Yeah. It honestly reminded me of Iverson used to do back in the day. Like, he was just – I mean, Iverson was more of a ball dominant. Like, you were saying earlier, they run Isaiah off a lot of screens to get him open. But, like, the way he can just, like, disappear behind, like, someone who's 6'9", then pop out and hit a three is unbelievable to watch from that perspective.
Yeah, I agree. It's Iverson's, like, the best comparison, except Iverson was, like, 3-4 inches taller than Isaiah, but that which is crazy. But that's why, like, we've never seen a player like Isaiah, like a guy this short. Not, like, we've seen Nate Robinson types, guys who can score in bunches, but carry an offense and on a playoff level like that, it was just – it's literally unprecedented.
Should be noted, Isaiah Thomas on the cover of the current Slam.
I was going to say, Pete.
Facts.
Good timing.
Yeah.
Wait, let's talk about the actual game.
Yeah, please do.
John Wall, excuse me.
No, I mean, well, Yaron, and I'd be interested to hear your take of sort of the course of game two in this series. You know, I mean, obviously the Isaiah Thomas part is the biggest story of it, but just the game. I mean, what a bloody game, literally. This series has been like a war out there, like people losing teeth. Wait, first of all, did he get the tooth replaced?
Yeah, it's I was wondering that. You know when you go to a press conference, you ask people questions, and then as you're writing your story, you're like, wait a second, I'm missing a little bit. So I was wondering that. I think it was replaced.
It was back. He certainly had
tooth in there. And he said he underwent like 6 hours of surgery. So I guess yesterday was Tuesday. So that was Monday. He went under oral surgery.
Did you not read the story, man? He wrote this all in his story.
He's standing in front of me. I'm just going to ask him.
Like Abe reads, please.
Yeah. Am I an editor?
crafting the IG post.
And he said he woke up like feeling like he couldn't barely speak. His like mouth is swollen the next day he woke up. I'm assuming they put in – I'm assuming – though he saved the tooth. Didn't he go down and get the tooth on –
Yeah.
Well, they said on the broadcast that they just like popped the tooth back in on – what was the first game? Sunday.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like he must have gotten like a veneer or a root canal of some sort. Cause like, I don't know. I just feel like your tooth pops out. You can't just
was rocking the mouth guard in game two. I mean, this has to be, you know, obviously the tooth thing pales in comparison to real life shit with his sister passing away. But this, the story of Isaiah Thomas in this playoffs continues to be an extremely compelling story. Like, I can't even remember when we've had a playoff, a guy going through this much stuff, physically, emotionally, life stuff all at once, and to be playing this well, to put up a performance like that is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's like you said, emotional and physical pain, and coupled with MVP-like performances.
Yeah, not to mention that he's not necessarily a guy that you would have pointed to as a guy that would become one of the faces of the league.
Exactly.
And the best player on the best team in the conference.
The whole thing's like unprecedented. Like the guy, so much of it, like you go from last pick in the draft to an MVP caliber player. You're that height. You're that good. The physical and emotional pain. And you kind of throw that all into like a blender together and you get this insane narrative storyline, and not in an exploitative way, just in an interesting way to watch somebody.
I mean, how tough is this guy to be able to, I mean, 53 points in any game is insane. To do it in the playoffs is unfathomable.
I mean, I don't know if you, did you guys listen to one of the latest Bill Simmons podcasts? I think he was talking about just the fact that, like, essentially the argument was that a player who's too short can never really take over a game.
Yo, I was having this conversation with someone the other day. How stupid is that?
But I'll take his side for a second.
Uh-oh.
No, because it's
get out.
It's something we've never seen. Nah, just because you've never seen it doesn't mean it can't happen. But like the argument, history was on his side until now. I get, like we said, Iverson. Who else? I mean, Tiny Archibald. I get, like, who are the other guys who are like?
I mean, Chris Paul.
But these guys are like 6'1".
The argument was Chris Paul is proof.
He said the argument was Chris Paul might just not be tall enough to literally, this is verbatim, to get them over the hump.
It just makes it so much harder.
But Iverson kind of trumps all of that, no?
As does Isaiah Thomas.
Right. Yeah. So and that's what makes, but I guess outliers don't prove things wrong, but they make what they do more exceptional.
Yeah. And I mean, original or OG Isaiah Thomas, you know, led the Pistons to two titles. Right. He's what, 6'1"?
Not to mention that it's not Steph Curry he's not 6'6".
Right.
I mean,
no, and I mean, especially like, and I hate that we have to, you know, harp on this for this long, but in today's league, like, the point guard is the dominant position. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see more and more of this as time goes on.
You know what I find amazing is, and I guess from, like you said, that vantage point yesterday, you kind of see it. His conditioning is unbelievable.
Unreal.
Because he doesn't take, I guess he takes defense off a few times. Like there was a play on, like, I forget who got the offensive rebound late in the game. Avery Bradley yelled at Isaiah. He let a guy dash in from the corner, didn't box him out. I don't remember who it was. But on offense, like, he doesn't – not only does he not take plays off, like, the way it works, what he does is, like, he's not just dribbling the ball up and, like, doing his own thing. They run him off, like, three screens, sprint him from side to side before he gets the ball – like, before they get into action.
Yeah.
And that's how, you score with one guy doing everything. But, like, it's amazing to have that juice still in overtime.
And add to that, like, he hits the floor more than anyone. Yeah. Like, he's constantly just getting up off the ground, which is scary. I mean, that makes me nervous that, like – you know,
it's a good point.
You can't hit the ground that many times.
It's like the running back in football comparison a little bit. Like, how many hits can you take? And he hits his head on guys because he's, like, always ducking in. It's interesting.
So what do you guys think about this series? Is it I mean, I feel like it's destined to go seven, just the way that both these teams play at home. And the Wizards are so bad on the road.
I mean, what's this stupid old saying?
Until one team wins on the road, home team loses.
So
we really nailed that one.
Yeah, I was like, come on, guys.
Jesus. That. But no, I mean, I honestly, the teams are just super evenly matched. Like, the Markieff Morris thing is huge. Like, if he's not 100%, then I think they're in real trouble.
He was great last night.
Yeah, he actually played awesome. As did Jason Smith, who apparently is not horrible.
Can we talk about this? Because as someone who watched the Knicks, I was like, is this not the same guy? He's hitting threes. He's got the dunk. He had a huge dunk.
I'm like, this guy. I mean, that was off of a sick pass as well from Wall, but still, he threw that thing down.
It's like a 29-year-old balding white guy with like a receding hairline.
My doppelganger.
It's really, like, I couldn't. I'm like, where did this guy come from?
But I think you recently wrote something about how there's so many former Knicks in the playoffs. Was Jason Smith included in that?
He was, and I think I wrote that. Not that Jason Smith has anything to do with the Wizards winning any games.
But no, I think, I mean, John Wall is just too good for them to get swept.
That's the crazy thing is, Isaiah goes off for 53, and then you don't even realize you look at the box score, and John Wall had 40 points and 13 assists.
It's like an all-time game.
And three steals and three blocks.
The blocks.
Like, what?
It's an all-time game.
I mean, it comes down to, I think, I mean, Brad Beal continues to just be ass. They're in real trouble. I mean, what do you make of that, Abe?
Is he going to out of this? To be honest, like, some of the rumblings on Wizards Twitter and stuff during the game were like, he's mentally hurt. Not there, or it was just so strange that he was like throwing errant passes over and over, dribbling the ball off his foot,
air balls,
strange decisions. I have no answer for that whatsoever. It was very strange to watch.
I find that cool in the playoffs. I mean maybe it's something deeper, but like we saw it with Lowry last year. Like when you see guys start to get in their head a little bit, just like it really gets them, and they start to question their shooting. And I think that's what, based on nothing, maybe it's an injury, but just it looks like Beal's lost his confidence. And he was, you know, he had put up scoring numbers last series, but didn't he say have some quotes about like his shot is off, he doesn't feel good about it?
I mean, the crazy thing is you forget about Beal is he's 23.
Oh yeah,
not to say that a guy who's been in the league for this long shouldn't have his wits about him in the playoffs and important games, but even knowing that, still, it's a 23-year-old kid out there.
I think you have a computer. I think he has good playoff numbers in his career,
I mean,
too.
I was going to say when they played the Hawks.
I mean, the last, like, five games. Semis,
wasn't he good then, Pete?
He had a huge series. When they went seven and the Hawks went to the conference finals that year, he had a massive series against them.
I mean, for his career, he's averaging 22 a game in the playoffs. And this playoffs, he's at 24.5 per game.
Yeah, that's really good.
What's he shooting 45%.
So just maybe the past few games, something, because I mean,
he'll be back, dude. He's too good.
That's why I say I think it's destined to go seven, because he's so comfortable at home. He could easily pop off for 30 plus.
They need him, like you saw, especially late in the game. Like as great as Wall is, you still need someone else sometimes if you need to generate a shot in the half court, and that's where Beal kind of comes in.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the hardest things too that's been a problem all season, and I think the Wizards thought they had solved it when they acquired Brandon Jennings. just give someone just to spell Wall just give him some rest. And for whatever reason, Brandon Jennings has been sort of hesitant or not trusting his own shot. He just hasn't been able to be out there. And John Wall has to play so many minutes, log so many minutes. And then the drop off from him to the next guy off the bench is so massive.
Yeah, I feel badly for Trey Burke, man. He's like,
oh yeah, I forgot
his
about
career is like falling off a cliff, and he was like coming out of college. He had an unbelievable college career, and he just hasn't worked out thus far. So I feel bad for that guy, man. He seems like a good dude.
Yeah,
from his Instagram.
He cracks us good messages.
Put that on his tombstone. Yeah. Seemed like a good dude on his Instagram.
Hashtag 21st century.
Abe, quote: he's a good guy.
That's the Wizards' problem, right? No bench, no depth. So when they go, when somebody comes
out.
But
in the playoffs, I feel like you only need seven guys. But I don't know. I guess if like your 6 and 7 is
Jason Smith
and Jennings.
Why didn't Bogdanovich play yesterday?
Oh, true. Abe?
I don't know. I'm not the coach.
Abe, answer me.
You're wrong. You were there.
I know. I can't say I ventured anywhere near the Wizards' locker room.
I do think it's a strange development that the Wizards seems to keep jumping out to these big leads and then can't hold on to them against the Celtics.
Is that make it work? Like,
yes.
As a Wizards fan, would you have rather get like wiped out in the first two games, right? Because it's almost more demoralizing.
Well, now. I guess in some ways you have, you know,
something
you know that the Wizards can beat the Celtics for extended stretches. I think it's a little concerning that I don't know how you finish. I mean, I don't even know how the Wizards didn't win that game last night based on the last 2.5 minutes of regulation.
Yeah. I don't know. It reminds me of what Dr. J said to us, that like, in today's NBA, it doesn't matter if you're up 20, then the team is almost guaranteed to come back and at least make it interesting.
I mean, Isaiah, I know, like, Dennis came in. Do you have to give the full shout-out here?
Dennis Page, our publisher?
Never heard of him.
Not sure which Dennis you're referring to. I was hoping it wasn't Dennis Page, but now that we're here,
go Peter ahead. We're talking. He was saying, how do you not double Isaiah? And, like, at first it sounds like, you know, it's an easy thing to say, but you do wonder. I know Isaiah's tough to double, but you do wonder. It does feel like there's a way to trap him or something, to make somebody else hit a shot in the game.
Honestly, I feel like, I don't know, this could be a wild theory that like coaches probably just look at him and they're like, yeah, but he's 5'9".
You think
we can't double someone who's 5'9". I don't know. That's like a hard thing to break.
Like, and I know they run those quick picks where, like, your defense isn't set, so, like, they do the handoff from Horford, and it's not like the guy guarding Horford is, like, ready to jump on a trap, but this, yeah. like, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, as we go forward, right? Because that's what a seven-game series, that's what's cool about it, is, like, you start to get used to what the other team does and kind of start becoming familiar with their actions and how to defend them.
Abe, what's your faith level on Scott Brooks right now?
I think Scott Brooks is actually great. Like, it's weird. Some of the sets and plays get great open shots, and I feel like that was something that was, like, going around Twitter last night, too, is, like, where were these sets from Scott Brooks in Oklahoma City? And I was like, well, he had two of the best players in the league that can freestyle at any exactly. moment and sort of do their own thing. But, yeah, I have confidence in Scott Brooks. You forget that this dude has gone deep in the playoffs multiple times, coached in the finals. I mean, the upgrade from Randy Whitman to Scott Brooks has been leaps and bounds, and I'm cool with Scott Brooks at the moment. But speaking of coaches,
yeah,
do you guys think that Doc Rivers? I mean, I'm just flip it all the way to back to the West.
That's fine. I had one. We've gone deep more on the East. Question for Giron.
Do your thing, man.
Related to because we talked a lot about press conferences in last week's episode, mm-hmm. and I don't know. I mean, having the Isaiah personal tragedy thing play out on such like a public forum mm-hmm. is an unfortunate but also interesting storyline.
Yeah, it's a way to phrase it. I like that.
Yeah, but from, you know, at these pressers when, you know, reporters are asking him about something so personal, is it like, do things get awkward? I mean, Isaiah has handled it very professionally, but, you know, is there like an air in the room, or, you know, are people like, oh my God, like, what, this is weird?
So I did the phrase, I parachuted in yesterday, so yeah. I don't cover him on a daily basis, but it seems like he was walking before the game. He was with his son at the podium, kind of joking around. In the locker room before the game, he wasn't talking, but he was talking, like, he spoke to a reporter off the record for a second. He was watching the video, watching the scout. It's actually funny. I think at one point he was watching the game one on the screen there, and Kelly Olynyk said, yo, they switch on you. You take it at Markieff every time. So I guess he took that to heart. So he's like, he's not reclusive there, and he doesn't seem like he's moping. Moping's a bad word, because it's understandable.
Yeah.
Why he'd be sad. He doesn't seem broken while he's there, which makes me think that it is the sanctuary thing, which he's been talking about. And so to answer your question, the press conferences, no. He seemed to be okay. He seems to... I don't want to say enjoy. I don't know the proper word to relish the idea or appreciate that he can kind of honor his sister in this public way.
Yeah, I think more than, you know, he's in a handful of players that really like appreciates one, his platform and presence, and yes. two, like how important basketball is to him as like an individual.
Yes.
And, like, it truly defines who he is.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But anyway, what were you saying about the Clippers?
Nah, that was all good shit. But I mean, I was just thinking we should flip it over to the West. I was curious to get your own thoughts on the way that the Clippers bowed out. I mean, we talked about it on the last podcast a little bit, but curious to get your own thoughts about what the Clippers do now, especially given the fact that a guy on the team that you cover, for the most part, Carmelo Anthony, has been talked about so much as is related to the Clippers. Just what's your take on that whole situation?
So interesting, because like I'm always the guy who like leans on the, you know, it's really been fluky, and it has been fluky. There's always the injury reasons, there's this, right. there's that. But at a certain point, I think you got to say this ain't working. So the question is, like, what do you do? I know I'm not answering your question. I think the way I lean with it is, like, I actually don't think it's a horrible idea. I don't remember the salary cap numbers, but I don't think, let's say, trying to trade for Carmelo and letting Blake go is a horrible idea.
Okay.
Like every time Blake, not that Griffin's not great, but like DeAndre always goes for 20 and 20s when Griffin's not in there. Him and Paul run those pick and rolls.
Well, how do you think Blake Griffin, let's just play out the hypothetical.
Right.
Blake Griffin, how is he received in New York? Or does he fit with the Knicks? Are you talking about a different trade where he would go
elsewhere? Well, he's a free agent, right? You have to do like a sign-in trade. And
so, no,
what's the deal on that?
He has an early termination option in his contract that he can exercise this summer if he sees fit. But the general consensus seems to be that he will do so.
And then he'll be a free agent.
Yeah.
Right, because we want to cash in now. And
exactly.
Especially.
Yeah.
So then, and then you can do a sign-in trade, but my understanding is that's hard to pull off with Carmelo.
Well, the thing with Carmelo is, and I hate to like get to like salary contract bullshit because we know nothing about it.
Not our
forte.
I'm kind
of just winging it.
I'm not an accountant.
The thing, just like, I guess like a hypothetical thing would be like, why would one, Melo has his no trade clause. Right. Why would he give Phil the satisfaction?
That's a whole separate. Yeah. I can go hours on that.
Yeah. Why wouldn't Carmelo just be like, nah, I'm staying. If y'all want to get rid of me, you got to cut me and pay me.
Yeah. So the Carmelo, I agree in a lot of ways. I think it'd be really cool if Carmelo just said to Phil, you know, screw, like, or if I was Carmelo, I would go to Dolan at this point and just like put your cards on the table and like, you know, him or me.
I Dolan honestly think that's the move, man.
Because, like, why not? The only thing I'm going to say, and not to get, like, too, I'm going to say TMZ, but there is the Lala stuff is interesting in terms of if that affects how he goes about, like, staying in New York or not. I have no idea either way. We assume that news is true, but it just maybe that changes his mind in terms of insisting on staying in New York with her. So if you're not staying in New York, the Clippers, I mean, where else? The Clippers are one of the teams. And I do. So I think, like, if a team with – I feel weird about saying tear the whole thing down because, like, you still have Chris Paul and you still have DeAndre. Like, you still have a good team. I don't know. I'm not – like, it's easy to say blow it up, but then – and do what? So, like, why not try to run it back and go with Carmelo? Maybe it's a slightly different team, and maybe that's what you need.
I agree. I mean, it's hard to win 50 games in the NBA.
Yeah. And, like, what's your next play? Like, blow it up, and then what?
Yeah. And then – yeah. And, like, do you think Doc is sticking around for a rebuild?
Exactly.
Hell no.
And he's, like, he's the president there, too, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, it's not –
he's so, a GM.
Yeah. So if you get – if you're doing all – if you blow it up and you lose Doc, then suddenly you're really tearing the whole thing down, which maybe is the right move, but, like, so you're going to go Sixers style? You know, like, maybe
– See, I would fire Doc.
You would fire Doc. I like that.
I mean,
I just don't know where, like...
That's a hot take, but...
Is it a hot take?
And keep the players, you mean? Fire Doc and keep the players?
So some of the players, decide which players are salvageable in this...
Fire Doc and stay win now mode. That's what you mean. Like,
yeah.
I think you have to. Like, Chris Paul...
I don't think they can blow it up, because the guys on the team are too good.
Yeah.
Like, it's silly. I agree. Everyone says blow it up, and like, again, I'm repeating, do what? Like, what's your move? Like, what's your play? Like,
I just think you need to get a real GM in there, get a new
coach.
Well,
that's a good... I like that.
So what's it... Maybe... All right, so you relieve Doc of his GM
duties, but
he won't
take that.
He stays as a coach.
He won't do that.
If I was him, I wouldn't
either.
Why
would he do that?
You don't want to... He doesn't want another ball. I don't blame him.
Huge ego check, for one thing. Like, I just don't see him.
He doesn't.
I think you got to get him all the way out of there. The ironic part about it is that Austin Rivers actually was pretty helpful as a player.
Yeah,
so I would keep him.
He's not.
He's
not,
like, keep Austin. That's
cruel. He's not bad.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
But I don't know. I mean, like, as a media, the collective media, everyone's thinking, all right, this is it. They're blowing it up. They're moving on. Someone's gonna go. But all you hear from the Clippers is we're keeping this core together. So why? What's not to believe? I don't get it. Like, where's the disconnect? Just because the media and, like, supposed hoop heads want this to happen, they think they're going to force it to happen.
That's a good point. There haven't been any major reports of it happening, though. I mean, Ballmer paid a lot of money for that. So at some point, rich guys are not patient. Like, or not super rich guys like that are not.
Can't relate. So
I have many. Super rich guys like me. You know, we don't have lots of patience.
Is Chris Paul 100% mortal lock for the Hall of Fame?
What's goes? You guys asked me the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I hear you. It's a good question.
So he's what, like, 8-time All-Star?
I mean, I think he is too.
What's his resume?
9-time All-Star, 8-time All-NBA,
and 15-time loser,
8-time All-Defensive Team. He's got a Rookie of the Year. All-star MVP.
I have friends who say, like, oh, he stinks, never wins, and it's getting increasingly harder to argue back. Like, at some point, like
because of the lack of playoff.
Yeah, like, the, you know, we all have know the people, like, rings, you know, you got to win, and at a certain point, like, I keep saying, you know, the bounces were bad this team, but at a certain point, it's not even like a lack of a finals, it's lack of a conference champion. It's really has there been any other cases like that in the league? I don't know. Like, of a guy that good, not even winning
Carmelo?
Playoff series?
Carmelo's big thing is he went to the conference finals, right?
Right.
And he won 3 gold medals.
And 10-time All-Star, 6-time All-NBA.
I mean, he's a lock just because he's averaged, 25?
Just off sheer volume, I think, statistically. I mean, this is the Dwight Howard thing, too. I mean, I guess Dwight Howard also took a team to the NBA finals.
Yeah,
Dwight Howard's statistics are going to wind up next to all the greats of the game in terms of, you know, rebounds and blocks. And
at one point, Dwight Howard was, like, a top 2-3 player.
He was unbelievable for a brief... Before he really hurt his back, he was unbelievable.
Also, Chris Paul, if you compare their resumes, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, I mean, I realize they play different positions, but we're just talking about Hall of Fame. I mean, Chris Paul, 8-time All-NBA, 9-time All-Star. Dwight Howard, 8-time All-NBA, 8-time All-Star. Those are basically the same.
It's interesting.
Dwight Howard has 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards, fewer All-Defensive teams, but 3 Defensive Player of the Year.
That's weird also. Yeah, I guess that's a longevity thing, I guess.
I think the instinct of most people would be to say that Dwight Howard, no, he can't be in the Hall of Fame. But his stats and his resume and the fact that he took a team to the finals in a year that LeBron James was in his conference.
Well, that's the Basketball Hall of Fame is weird. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It's the Basketball Hall of Fame. It's liberal. Like, I thought it was weird. You guys might say this is blasphemous. I thought it was weird that not only that he got in, but that Tracy McGrady got in and that nobody seemed to question whether he belonged there. Not to go against Tracy McGrady.
I was thinking the same thing.
And no one brought this up. I didn't hear anyone say, really, T-Mac? Like,
do you say that because of the length of his career or because of the lack of accomplishments?
Both. I mean, T-Mac had a great, like, what was he, great for 3 years, 4 years? Like, to me, it's not a Hall of Fame career. He was amazing and awesome, but it just...
I mean, he was 7-time All-NBA, 7-time All-Star.
So that's right off-rip. That's worse than Chris Paul.
Just below Chris Paul. Well, that's in terms of those two categories. Those aren't the only categories.
He was a 7-time All-NBA. That's more than I thought, but...
Averaged 19.6 points per game for his career.
So
under 20 for his career.
Which is right. I mean, Chris Paul is 18.7.
Yeah, but Chris Paul is also his sister. Correct. 7-8.
Like, I'm not saying T-Mac doesn't belong in. I was surprised that there was no surprise that he got in so easily, if that makes sense. Like, there was no conversation about it. And that surprised
me. I know. Like, I feel like everyone's automatic response when someone gets in is, oh, well-deserved. Like, there's no, like, because...
The opposite of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Very fun, very interesting.
Baseball Hall of Fame, they don't want anybody in.
Well, are we gonna mention the name that I feel like we want to mention in this space or not?
Mitch Richmond?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I missed this.
I mean, Mitch.
Peter and I have long said that anyone can get in the Hall of Fame if Mitch Richmond can be Hall of Famer.
I'm agreeing with you.
I don't
you.
Know if that's a blasphemous hot take either, but
because it's the basketball Hall of Fame. Like, Manu Ginobili is going to get in.
I mean, Yao Ming is in. He played like 5 years.
Exactly. So it's kind of.
Yao Ming had what, like 13,000 total NBA points, if that?
Yeah. Like, it's
no, far less.
Seven? What was it? Seven, half
under 10,000.
Yeah. That's. I told you yesterday, I'm so bad at guessing like total points and all that, but I knew it was low. But I mean, I feel like we had this argument last summer, and we were one trying to decide who votes for the Hall of Fame, and two, we were saying that like Yao is obviously in because of a cultural impact, and you know,
yeah,
we've
definitely talked about this before.
But as far as Mitch Richmond, I mean, yeah, like he was good, and
I mean, he scored a shitload of points.
He was really good. All right, he was a really good, nice
up
NBA
until
player.
We came to Washington. He scored a shitload of points, always over 20 points per game.
This is the Hall of Fame. Like, it shouldn't be reserved for really good players.
I agree. I actually agree with you on that one.
And so we have this argument. Like, honestly, this comes up in the office once a week minimum. And the argument from the people who think he should be in is Michael Jordan said he was a really good player.
Mitch Richmond, that is.
Mitch Richmond was a really good player.
Right.
He was
not
a really tough player.
I agree. That's not the criteria. Like, being really good. Like, going back to T-Mac, being really good for a short span is not the criteria to get it. In my opinion, it shouldn't be.
I mean, like, so from this era, and we were arguing, we were debating the merits of Derrick Rose yesterday.
Oh, God. Is he going to get it? He can't get in.
He would be the only MVP in league history not to get
in. I saw that. I remember that.
Yeah, which is wild. I mean, I feel like you're almost a lock if you just win an MVP award.
Derrick Rose.
That's going to be a really interesting one. But you brought up a good point, too. I mean, as it stands now, it's a no, right? But
for D Rose,
gotta be,
yeah,
right?
No, but his career is also only halfway over.
Correct.
Maybe.
I mean, there's a well. Look, there's always a chance that he finds his way onto a title team, much in the way that Mitch Richmond did.
Right.
Plays much like, in the way Gary Payton did, like people like this.
Right. Exactly. You
know? Yeah, plays like that six man role, kind of like I'll call it not the same game, but you know, Manu Ginobili ish. You know, 25 minutes on a really good team.
Well, not even just having the ring next to your name on your basketball reference page changes it.
Is there any chance the Knicks don't give him $90 million this summer?
Dwight
Howard or Derrick Rose?
Derrick Rose
or both?
It's unbelievable that Rose that they're like consider like I'm gonna say Derrick Rose. I feel like he was really nice to the media and really giving his time, but
yeah, he had a good year too. All things considered,
on the court, he was not good, and like that there can that you haven't heard yet that he's definitely not coming back should be worrisome to Knicks fans, and it's like
all right.
I feel like there's a chance he comes back, and that's a huge mistake.
Literally, the craziest thing that Phil is doing, amongst other things, is like
a long list.
Publicly wanting to get rid of Melo, but also publicly saying we want to bring Derrick Rose back. Yeah, no, I don't get it.
It's very, his priorities are strange.
Are a mess. But speaking of MVPs, and this is super brief, but how do you guys feel about them or the NBA not presenting the MVP award until after the playoffs?
I hate it. Also, by the way, that was a much better transition than the one I tried to make earlier.
From death to the Clippers.
Yeah, sorry. That was much smoother.
All good.
I mean, you stumbled with it a little bit, but it still came out far better than mine.
Thanks, bro.
Anyways, what was the question?
Like a good backhanded compliment to get your confidence up.
Hey, I got to get him in.
My question was, how do you guys feel about the NBA giving out the MVP award after the playoffs?
I hate it.
You want like the someone wrote a call like it. They want the back and forth, like they like Harden and Westbrook going at each other and stuff like that.
No, I just want the moment of the guy, the MVP holding up the trophy.
And I mean,
as
even
Brandon
like,
Jennings tweeted, like he tweeted the picture of AI getting the MVP trophy. It was sick moment MVP, for the fans.
Yeah, not only MVP but also Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man, etc. If they're in the playoffs, but you kind of rob the fans of this moment. You're making it like super exclusive to just players. It's kind
and
of
Drake.
It's a little and Drake, of course.
I mean, but, it'll be fun as it. That will be fun as its own thing. I think. That'll be a fun night on Twitter. It'll be a fun thing to go to if you're lucky enough to go. It'll be a fun thing to watch if you're watching at home. That that Players Awards ball or whatever we're calling it in of itself will be a fun thing. That being said, at the cost of what? At the cost of having that sort of MVP moment during the playoffs and having MVP
that iconic picture and that photo.
The iconic picture, the how does this guy do in the playoffs as the MVP? You know, those things.
Yeah,
are
I
lost.
Like that. Like, there's the let's say Westbrook's probably gonna win MVP, right? I think people tally that up. So like, it would have been cool to see him and Harden go at each other if Harden thought he lost. Like, there's a famous, I forget what year. I think it was David Robinson won the MVP, and then Olajuwon destroyed him in a playoff series. Like, that stuff's great.
Yeah, like, imagine the scene if Westbrook gets handed the MVP trophy and James Harden's like, fuck this guy, and then goes in on him. Like, the drama, like, you know, I just think that was a missed opportunity. And I wonder if the NBA will reconsider based on how, I mean, we'll see how successful the event goes.
Well, they got to see who shows up to this thing, number one. But also,
that's
like,
good point. You got to guarantee the guys come out.
Like, 10 years from now, you know, would people in our position are looking at like Getty images of like past MVP awards are going to see like AI holding up the trophy in front of all the
Sixer fans
and like either Westbrook or Harden with like Drake taking the MVP.
Well, Drake's just going to be
holding the MVP.
I think Drake's
trophy.
Just going to hold up the trophy himself.
Salute to Getty images, though.
Yeah, oh, big time all day.
Also, that show, I know it could be fun, but like it could also be like, do we need another ESPYs? I don't know.
No, that's we suck.
I know. That's. I mean, I guess like if the NBA guys go all in on it and like dress crazy and do funny weird stuff, like then it could be fun. But
I don't get like the NBA tried this and it was a
disaster. Oh yeah,
I
forgot about that. Was that last year?
2 years ago.
Did you watch that? I didn't watch that.
No, nobody watched it.
But they knew. But we knew the awards. Those were made up awards, right?
That was the difference. Yeah, it was like the players' awards. So they voted on it themselves. Remember the big thing was Harden got the players' MVP over Curry.
Yes.
I don't even think he showed up.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that will be fun. I think there's definitely like some problematic parts to it as far as can we get everyone to show up? Will people know beforehand what's about to go down? I mean, that happens with like movie awards shows and stuff too. So,
And by the way, movie award shows stink. Who watches it?
So bad.
Like I said, it's a fun couple hours on Twitter.
That's what it is.
If nothing
good.
Else.
You know, it's good for the business. Like you're like right. Slam's website will have plenty of content the next day.
Good for the tent.
Yo, before we wrap things up, I got a question. What the hell? What's going on with LaMarcus Aldridge, man? Is he just horrible now? Did anybody watch the Rockets first?
I couldn't believe. You know what's cool? I was going to say I couldn't believe that he couldn't score on Ryan Anderson. But I got to give Zach Lowe credit. I mean, Zach Lowe is great. He had like that preview column, and he wrote how Ryan Anderson, like in a sneaky way, is a really good post defender.
Oh, really?
Which was maybe the greatest like pregame, most random pregame, I don't want to call it, prediction call. Like it was just a great anecdote. I had no idea. Maybe I don't watch the games that closely or in that way.
I mean, you know better than I, but like LaMarcus.
I agree. I could, like Ryan Anderson was like stifling. It was weird.
He blew like three wide open layups in a very short span.
And he was out of it.
He just looks, I don't know, something's going on.
And they need him. Like they rely so heavily on Cole. It's like not a Spursian team. Like it's so heavily, it's almost similar to like an extreme, but like how the Thunder rely so much on Westbrook, like the Spurs, Kawhi does everything for them on offense and defense, really. I mean,
I'm hesitant to say they're going to get, you know, just run over because it's the Spurs. But I mean, if game one was any indication of what's to come, this is not looking good.
And we've seen instances before with pop teams where like they're great, but just they just don't have the skills or athleticism to match. Like the Thunder a few times ran through them like four straight games. Like sometimes they just run into a wall where things stop, where they just get exposed a little bit in terms of the lack of athleticism or power, firepower.
Yeah, I want to say they were either the victim or the culprit of a 40-point game pretty recently.
So I think they won last year. I think that was, if I remember correct, I don't know, Abe, if you remember. Like, I think they won game one by like 40 against the Thunder and then ended up losing the series
that
like by
it.
Five or something, which
yeah.
was like a weird swing, weird turn.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what I'm talking about. Like, the Thunder kind of figured them out and that was it.
Yeah. Oh, well, interesting stuff. I don't know. But wait, do you give any credence or do you think Kawhi has any chance to sneakily win the MVP award or not? It seems to be like a hot
no,
pick.
It's like the hipster pick.
Yeah.
But I think they tally. Like, I think I'm just saying no because I think somebody was like keeping track. I mean, I guess people could be lying about the like what they voted publicly, but like there were some sites that were keeping track of who.
Wait, are we going to be able to see who voted for who? I love
yeah.
that too.
Oh, it's, yeah. We're such nerds. I scroll that like crazy. That's like my favorite thing. I open that
spreadsheet. The best was like
spreadsheet.
The year Melo finished third. It was Gary Washburn.
Gary
was the
Washburn.
Only person.
I remember. And I think, and then Levitard made up that it was him and got attacked on like Twitter just trying to bother Heat fans. Oh, we're such nerds.
Yeah. I mean, this is our live. Either fortunately or unfortunately.
It's both. Yes,
sometimes
exactly.
I can't decide.
Exactly.
All right. I mean, I guess that's it. Abe, do you want to share a little news or not? Nah? Do you want me to do it for you?
I mean, I don't know why you had to make it so weird.
Because
right
it is it is weird. The whole thing is weird.
Yeah, this is going to be my last. Well, I don't know if it'll be the last Slam podcast I ever do, but certainly will be the last Slam podcast I ever do under the title of senior editor at Slam Magazine. This is my last week in that position. Got some new stuff on the horizon, but I mean, we all actually came in right around the same time.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I started as an intern alongside both of you, I think.
I think you got maybe like 6 months before me.
Maybe
yeah.
I was there. I know Peter and I were there.
Yeah, same year.
Around September of 2011,
yeah.
which was the lockout season for the NBA. So
yeah, I remember we had the now fix it
yes,
cover.
Burning ball on fire.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I've been with Slam through that, through to now, through a lot of other changes, a lot of people coming and going, but now is my time to say goodbye. So no one better to do that with than the two people in this room who basically started at the same time as I in this industry and at Slam. So I mean, I've had an opportunity to do some amazing shit for the last six NBA seasons. You know, you guys have been right along with me through all of that, so it's gonna be really weird to not be in this office on a daily basis anymore. But hopefully I'll still be, you know, contributing on a freelance basis in the way that your own does, competing for space in the magazine. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't really remember any, like, amazing stories involving the three of us, but maybe that's for another
yeah,
recap podcast in the future.
I mean, I guess just as, like, overlaying theme or big theme, like, or I don't even know what's theme, but I just think it's super rare to, like, work with people that are generally and seriously friends, like
absolutely,
you know, we shared dinner at your own house.
You get the wow emotional face.
Yo,
right now
your boy is on a
you're
very,
not, I know I
you're
got your
an
back
emotional
Pete.
Journey
I got your
I've
back
been super
Pete.
Emotional
no you're allowed to be, it's an emotional time. Abe's Lee, it's a big deal.
I've been
I got your back
super. This is a super emotional time for your boy on many different levels, but I mean, like, you know, just to be able to be like, yo, you want to chill and not having to be like, oh fuck, I gotta like forcibly hang out with this kid I work with just to like maintain some sort of weird in-office relationship. Like, it's a legitimate friendship. Like, we've talked about some very heavy real life
absolutely.
Things with one another, and you know, it's we were back as interns in the fucking
yes.
pit with really just sitting there with the three of us together, and it's like, all right,
yeah.
we can either be friends and make this cool or like
or compete,
just stare at each
we
other.
Kind of did too.
Yeah, I mean, there was there was a healthy competition amongst
absolutely.
It all,
no,
sure.
I mean, I the number one by far hardest part of leaving Slam Magazine, leaving the podcast, the, you know, we have get plenty of fun stuff we do, cool free sneakers. The number one hardest thing by far is the fact that I don't get to come into the office every day and hang out with five of my best friends and talk about basketball and how we're going to make cool shit and just talk, you know, just hang with, you know, five to six people and then another whole rotating cast of extended Slam fam that have also become some of our best friends. So that's, I mean, like you said, that's by far going to be the hardest part, is not getting to do that every single day. So
it's a very cool
part of you guys. Yeah. I mean, for those of you that have never met anyone in the extended Slam fam or never been to our office or never don't know any of us personally, just know that everything that comes out of our office comes through our magazine. It's all very, very real, very family. You know, there's nothing cosmetic about our friendships here. There's nothing fake about our podcast. When we argue or when we agree, these are all, it's all real shit. And it's with our real, really good friends here in this office. So it's tough.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with the pod, to be completely honest.
Subscribe on iTunes.
It will not die, but it will certainly
reincarnate.
It will be certainly suffering a massive loss, one that I'm not fully sure what I'm going to do about yet. I mean, I don't know. I seriously have no
idea. I'll be around, man. Yeah. I'll be around. Just under a different title. So
you're going to walk, you know, you're going to walk in here and see Abe on his air mattress. Just like, I'm ready to go.
That might happen. Let's not rule that out. I might be, I'm 100% going to accidentally come to this office on autopilot one morning just and be like, oh shit. Wrong office.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you get here early enough, no one will be here, so figure it out quickly.
That's a good point. That is a good point. But nah, I will never have a job as fun. I will never have a office workplace as cool and as friendly and with as many people that I like. That will literally never happen again, and that's one of the hardest parts of deciding to leave Slam for everyone, for anyone who comes to that point. So right. Definitely feeling that for real. But the podcast, it is one of the hardest things to say goodbye to. And I just want to say I appreciate anyone that's ever in person, via text, on social media, ever said anything nice about the pod to me or to both of us in general. We had no idea what this was going to be when we started it, and it will continue to grow and be an amazing thing even without me. That being said, it's been awesome to have people help us make it grow. That goes from everyone that's like helped us book a guest to the guests themselves to people that have listened from number one. I really hope you didn't listen to number one, but if you jumped in at 10, at 20, at 30, whatever, we appreciate you. I just wanted to say that to everyone out there. So keep rocking with the podcast. I hope to make some guest appearances along the way.
Yeah. And I mean, just to piggyback off that, whenever we're out at an event or, you know, we bump into people and like, someone comes up to us and they're like, yo, we really like the podcast or whatever. Even I try and play it cool, but whenever that person walks away, we are fucking gassed. We're like, yo.
Like dapping each other up.
Yo, they fuck with the pod. This is crazy. The pod. So good looks to everyone out there. My man Tokyo Mike.
Mike in Japan.
Yeah, and I guess that's it, man. I don't really even know what else to say. Except thanks for everything and see you, man.
Likewise, man. We are out. Thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thank you, man. Sorry we had to drag you into this.
No, I mean, it's not to piggyback on it. I'm always so happy when I get to come back in his office.
Oh, I mean, dude, God. This is your audition as well. So.
Oh, I'm on the spot here.
All right, we'll be back. Peace.